Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Probation and parole has kind of grown like a weed in the yard. It used to be there was animus. People were tough on crime and they were out there passing bills. Now it's just sort of forgotten.
Nearly 5 million people in the United States are in the parole and probation system. That's more than double the number of people incarcerated in this country. And while there's been a lot of attention and advocacy around prison reform, you heard it there at the top, there's a lot less about probation and parole reform. Well, today the Justice Lab at Columbia University is releasing two reports. They're focusing on a major overhaul of the parole system and how reform can reduce the rate of revocation and mass incarceration. Vincent Schiraldi is the senior research scientist at that Justice Lab at Columbia University and also former probation commissioner for New York City.
Probation and parole grew far beyond what anybody ever could have imagined, and they were originally designed as a sort of rehabilitative individual program to help people turn their lives around. Now they've become really largely a processing system back into incarceration, and that needs to change.
Well, describe how that happened. People might have the impression that probation and parole were alternatives to incarceration, keep people out of prison. Is it working that way?
Right. That's certainly the way they were designed in the 1800s. But no, what happened was when mass incarceration started to mushroom in the late 70s and early 80s, mass supervision mushroomed right alongside it. So it went from about 1 million people to about 5 million people. And it was never designed to be that big. It was never funded adequately, even though it's got a lot more people on probation and parole. $9 out of every $10 goes to prisons. And so now you have bureaucrats, mid-level probation and parole officers, people that used to work for me, good people, trying to manage way too many cases with way too few resources. And while you might not be able to individualize and help people turn their lives around, you can write a violation report and send somebody back to prison. And so far too often, that's what happens.
So Vincent, you're describing a situation where probation and parole is so overwhelmed with convicted people that the default setting is just to send them right back into the prisons where they're not supposed to be in the first place.
That's right. And there's a lot of people trying to do good work. It's just that the system is too big to succeed, which is the name of our report. It just needs to be smaller and needs to hold on to some of the resources that it has that now go to prisons and jails to help people find housing, find jobs, get drug treatment, get mental health treatment, so that they turn into the kind of people we all want them to be, not just to process them back into incarceration at ever greater numbers.
Can you describe a little bit what happens to the typical convicted person? I'm going to say somebody who got a 3-year sentence, got paroled after 1 year, they're supervised, they're back out on the street trying to stay out of jail, maybe, and then typically what might happen?
Well, very often it's kind of phlegmatic supervision. You know, there's a real life case of a Philadelphia rap artist named Meek Mill. A lot of your listeners may have heard of. He was given probation and sent to jail for 8 months, and then given probation when he was 19 years old. Now he's 30. He's been on probation for 11 years, which is pretty extraordinary in Pennsylvania. And 11 years into it, he popped a wheelie on his motorcycle as part of a music video and got in a fight in a St. Louis airport. And he was revoked on probation and given 2 to 4 years. He was actually given more time for the technical revocation on probation than he got for his original crime 11 years ago. And so 11 years on probation is nuts. 1 to 2 years is more what should be happening, because that's when supervision actually matters the most. Everything beyond that is diminishing returns. And it should be focused, intense, and rehabilitative during that time, not long and bureaucratic.
What is supervision supposed to accomplish in the first place? I think that's an important question.
Sure. So good supervision should focus on what people need to get back on a straight and narrow, help them get it. So that could be education. It could be a job. It could be drug treatment. And really supervise them well, so you see them frequently enough to encourage them to go to the programs they're supposed to go to and help them work through the navigation of the system. And then as people do well, you should reward them. Some states now give you 30 days off for every 30 days you haven't gotten rearrested. And that encourages people to stay on the straight and narrow. And then at some point, You bang the gavel. You say, hey, you did a good job. You're off probation. You're off parole. Go forth and be the kind of citizen we all want you to be.
So the kind of case where somebody spends 11 years on probation and then winds up back incarcerated for infractions during that time seems egregious. Your list, Vincent, of recommended reforms, what would reforming this system look like?
So the first example I gave was Arizona and Missouri have done what I described. Every 30 days you behave well, you get off 30 days off your probation or parole term. And what that does is it gives people hope. It gives them something to work hard for so that they can get the reward that they want rather than just threatening them with punishment and return to incarceration. When those states did that, they had fewer people going to jail. They had fewer rearrests of people on probation. So that's really one thing. The other is just to shorten probation and parole terms so that the caseloads are small enough so the probation officers and parole officers can do the jobs they were hired to do. And then if people do get run afoul of the law, they violate probation, short hits, quick returns to prison. Louisiana, of all places, which is hardly a bastion of criminal justice reform, recently capped parole violation terms. You can't go back on your first two technical violations, non-criminal. And then beyond that, it's 15 days for the first one that you go back to jail for, then 30 days, then 45 days, and only 45 days for good after that, as opposed to 2 to 4 years that Meek Mill got.
Vincent Schiraldi, I wonder, though, if there isn't a risk that judges and prosecutors, if probation gets much shorter, right, that they might react by doing exactly what you don't want them to do, which is recommending longer prison sentences. Judges might react and say, well, there isn't as much probation available. I'm going to keep this guy in jail.
The states that have reduced probation and parole terms have not seen that. So we got a bill passed when I was probation commissioner that allowed judges to give people 5, 4, or 3 years on probation if they had committed a felony. It used to be only 5 years. Judges used that bill. They also were able to shorten terms at the end of probation. We would go back and say, this guy did well. Can you let him off early? They used that, and they still put fewer people on probation and parole and didn't increase the number of people they were sending to jail. And crimes continue to decline in New York City. So there is a way, and I think you're right. People should be concerned about unintended consequences, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't innovate and we shouldn't be careful about it and study it when we do.
Vincent Schiraldi with the Columbia Justice Lab at Columbia University and former New York City probation commissioner under Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Vincent, thanks for being here.
Thank you.